0009 General Waste Discharge Requirements for Cold Water Concentrated Aquatic Animal Production Facility, which are basically fish hatcheries. And these are discharges to surface waters. NPDES permit number CAG131015. And I'll call on Lisa Bernard.
Thank you, Chairman Corbett and members of the board. My name is Lisa Bernard of your staff, and I'm here this morning to provide an overview of the item before you for consideration, which is a new general NPDES permit for cold water concentrated aquatic animal production facilities, more commonly referred to as hatcheries. Throughout this presentation, I will be using the terms CAP facility and hatcheries interchangeably. And in order to familiarize you, I'm going to give you a brief overview of a typical hatchery operation that would be intended for coverage under this general permit. Then I will present an overview of existing permit coverage for the hatcheries in the North Coast region, notable similarities and changes from existing coverage to those proposed for coverage under the general order. And the reason that we are presenting today is to make clear how coverage of the hatchery facilities under this general permit is consistent with both EPA's national effluent limit guidelines as well as the Basin Plan's hatchery policy.
Ms. Bernard, real quick, sorry to interrupt. Can we swear the parties in too?
I'm sorry, pardon?
We didn't do the oath for those who would be
comfortable. Thank you. This is the time and place for a hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider adoption of proposed order number R1-2015-0009, General Waste Discharge Requirements for Cold Water Concentrated Aquatic Animal Production Facility Fish Hatchery Discharges to Surface Waters, NPDES Permit Number CAG131015. This item has been properly noticed, and I wanted to ask anybody who's turned in a speaker card, do you object to that determination on proper notice? Okay, let the record reflect there were no objections. All those who expect to give testimony in this matter, you need to be under oath. So please raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that you will tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
And then when I believe I saw everyone in the audience, but in case I didn't, and to make sure, please identify when you give your name and you testify that you have been sworn in. And the timelines for presentation are as follows. Staff, 20 minutes. The permittees, 10 minutes. And interested members of the public, 3 minutes each. Does any of the parties that are going to testify here today object to that time allocation? Okay, let the record reflect there were no objections entered. At this time, we'll start with a staff presentation.
Thank you, Chairman Corbett, and I have been sworn in. My name is Lisa Bernard, again, of your staff. So, it is on. Oh, now it thinks it's on. Okay. Do you want to use the other one?
Patty, can you just advance for her?
Or do we have the other? Is there another? The big fancy one. You?
Well, I think she's doing it.
Oh.
Okay, great.
What happened? All right. Great. Sorry, I hope that doesn't count against my time.
I'm sorry, it's up.
All right. I guess the lights are down as much as possible. So a cold water...
And then I don't think your time is entered on the clock. I don't see the green light.
Oh, thank you. I'll adjust. That'll work. Mm-hmm. A cold water concentrated aquatic animal production facility, or CAP, is defined as a hatchery, fish farm, or other facility that contains, grows, or holds cold water fish species or other cold water aquatic animals in ponds, raceways, or other similar structures, and discharges at least 30 days per year. Under various ownerships, each of the five CAP facilities in the North Coast region are operated by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife to mitigate the loss of fish habitat above constructed dams or for recreational stocking purposes. CAP facilities are constructed to simulate natural cold water streams and are used to produce cold water fish species, typically trout or salmon. Production units at a typical CAP facility consist of fish spawning, egg incubation, hatching structures, and rearing areas. Fresh water is supplied through surface water diversions, and these facilities have a flow-through design where the water continuously enters the headworks and passes through a series of production units. Average flow rates through the North Coast facilities range from about 7 million gallons per day to 60 million gallons per day. Depending on a variety of environmental factors, the animals in these facilities may require various treatments or antibiotics to treat disease. Water flowing through portions of the facility undergoing disease treatments or cleaning are diverted to settling basins prior to discharge. Settling basins are the key waste treatment component at most CAP facilities and at every CAP facility in the North Coast region. Each hatchery has multiple discharge points, including the fish ladder, flow through water from production areas, and treated effluent from the settling basins. In the North Coast region, there are currently five CAP facilities permitted through individual MPDS permits issued by the Regional Water Board to discharge wastewater to surface waters. You may note that the order numbers for these permits date as far back as 1997. The reason for the extended delay in renewing these permits has been related to the interpretation of our basin plan prohibition on point source discharges as modified by the basin plan's policy on the regulation of fish hatcheries, fish rearing facilities, and aquaculture operations, also referred to as the hatchery policy. These issues have been resolved, and later in the presentation, I will discuss how the proposed general permit before you today applies the existing basin plan requirements to the CAP facilities intended for coverage in a manner consistent with the hatchery policy as well as the National Effluent Limit Guidelines. Flow-through CAP facilities generate a variety of wastes associated with feeding, feces, residuals of disease control chemicals used for maintenance of animal health, such as antibiotics or hydrogen peroxide, and residuals of chemicals used for cleaning equipment or for maintaining or enhancing water quality conditions. There are generally two categories for application of disease control chemicals. Water treatment chemicals applied through immersion or flushing the entire volume of water through a component of the hatchery, or chemicals applied in small volumes in fish feed. Metals may be present as feed additives, as component of sanitation products, or due to deterioration of machinery and equipment. Various pesticides are generally used for controlling animal parasites and aquatic plants and may be present in wastewaters. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife's pesticide unit has conducted toxicity testing for a number of the common disease control chemicals used in fish hatcheries to identify concentrations safe for application in the hatchery facilities. Hatcheries are subject to the United States Environmental Protection Agency Effluent Limit Guidelines for the CAP point source category. The ELGs do not require numeric effluent limits, but rather require hatchery facilities to develop and implement a best management practices plan, which incorporates solids control, material storage and handling, maintenance, record keeping, and operator training. EPA found that these BMP activities appropriate for control of pollutants in the effluent from CAP facilities is based upon studies supporting development of those regulations. Specifically, during development of the ELGs, EPA examined environmental fates of cap wastes and technologies currently available for control of pollutants such as nutrients, metals, pesticides, and antibiotics. EPA observed that although most treatment systems are not specifically designed and operated to remove metals or pesticides, that many of the treatment systems, such as settling basins used within the industry, provide adequate reductions of these pollutants. Antibiotics, which are typically incorporated into feed, can ultimately be released into the environment, but once in the environment, antibiotics are most commonly bound to sediment and other particles. EPA noted that in flow-through and recirculating systems, much of the unmetabolized drug can be bound to feces and other solids in the effluent. Thus, the control of solids results in the reduction of drug concentrations in the effluent. Compliance with technology-based limits established by the ELGs is based upon compliance with the BMP plan developed for a facility. So this is a picture of a typical juvenile rearing tank, and as you can see from this photo, solids from this type of operation settle very quickly to the bottom, despite the flow-through nature of this system. So water's actively moving through this system in the course of this picture. In addition to the BMP plan documents required to comply with the ELGs, the proposed general permit retains numeric limitations for total suspended solids, settleable solids, and pH from existing individual permits for the hatchery facilities. As with the ELGs, the hatchery policy from the basin plan specifically contemplates the necessity and ability for hatcheries to treat fish for disease. The hatchery policy adopted in 1989 defines the conditions under which point source discharges from hatcheries can be allowed into surface water all year long. In order to allow the year-round discharge of effluent from hatchery facilities, the policy requires protection of beneficial uses and does not allow for discharges of cleaning waste and disease treatment chemicals. For the sake of presentation, the key points of the policy are summarized here. The general permit for consideration today retains requirements implementing the hatchery policy from existing MPDS permits. This item was open for public comment for a total of 64 days, including the extension of time staff granted in response to written request from the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Staff received timely comments on the draft general permit from two of the permittees, Department of Fish and Wildlife and PacifiCorps. No other comments were received during the public comment period. Regional Water Board staff met with both of the commenters to discuss requested modifications to the general permit prior to the hearing today. Some modifications were made in response to comments, while other comments were addressed by clarifying our application of requirements within the general permit. Staff and the permittees have had multiple conversations regarding the requirements in the draft permit, and as a result, we believe that the proposed general permit for consideration today presents a path forward for the protection of water quality associated with hatchery operations in the North Coast. Staff received and responded to over 75 comments, the majority of which came from the Department of Fish and Wildlife. PacifiCorps, the owner of Iron Gate Hatchery, requested that the Regional Water Board staff remove this facility from the proposed general permit due to complexities associated with the total maximum daily load requirements for that facility. Staff agreed to this change based on the unique circumstances associated with that facility. Discharges from Iron Gate Hatchery will continue to be regulated under the existing MPDS permit until an updated permit can be adopted, which is currently anticipated in 2016. During the public comment period, Department of Fish and Wildlife requested that staff update the description of chemicals and aquaculture drugs used for the treatment and control of disease in the proposed general permit. The department indicated that CAP facilities operated by Department of Fish and Wildlife no longer use copper sulfate. So that chemical was removed from the general permit. Slice, a newer drug approved in the U.S. for use through the Aquatic Animal Drug Approval Partnership Program under oversight of U.S. Fish and Wildlife, was added to the permit in the description of chemicals used at the facilities. These changes were made in the proposed general permit. However, as with all disease treatments, chemical-specific information, including toxicity test results, must be submitted for each chemical, including slice, in conjunction with the notice of intent for coverage under this general permit before they can be authorized for use at any given facility. The main issue discussed between Department of Fish and Wildlife and staff was their request for chemical-specific effluent and receiving water limitations. Department of Fish and Wildlife is concerned with the text of the hatchery policy, which suggests that any and all detected disease treatment waste is not allowed. More specifically, Department of Fish and Wildlife has indicated concern that laboratory testing and field technology continues to improve, and thus detection limits have decreased over time. Department of Fish and Wildlife is concerned with the hatchery's ability to show compliance with this requirement, given current analytical capability to achieve very low detection limits for such chemicals. As an alternative, Department of Fish and Wildlife requested chemical-specific water quality-based effluent limitations and receiving water limitations. Staff did not incorporate chemical-specific effluent or receiving water limitations as requested by the department, because those changes are not necessary for consistency with the existing hatchery policy. Regional Water Board staff understands Department of Fish and Wildlife is remaining concerned with its ability to comply with the hatchery policy, despite the fact that current data indicates the hatcheries routinely comply. We agree that detection limits and methods have improved dramatically since the hatchery policy was first adopted, and a literal interpretation of the hatchery policy language would go against the policy's general purpose, because treatment for control of disease is necessary for the successful operation of every hatchery. For application in this general permit, we believe that the path forward applies the hatchery policy in a manner that prevents discharges that cause toxicity, exceed water quality objectives, and that otherwise impair beneficial uses. Staff added language to the proposed general permit and fact sheet clarifying this interpretation. It is important to remember that the hatchery policy was in effect and incorporated into requirements of the existing individual permits for these facilities. And as I stated earlier, current information continues to indicate that the hatcheries are operating in compliance with these requirements. So in order to verify compliance with the hatchery policy, the proposed general permit requires each facility to submit a reduction and verification monitoring plan. These special studies must be designed and implemented to demonstrate that discharges associated with cleaning and disease control activities are not toxic, comply with water quality objectives, and show that each hatchery's BMPs are protective of beneficial uses. Results generated from these facilities could be used to reevaluate the hatchery policy requirements or BMPs if data indicates a need. In summary, we have 4 outdated permits with similar operations that will be covered by this general permit. This permit does not implement significant changes to numeric effluent limitations from existing individual permits. The general permit does implement the U.S. EPA's effluent limit guidelines requiring a BMP plan. The general permit requires a special study at each hatchery to verify source reduction, effluent toxicity, and effluent concentrations of treatment chemicals which are protective of beneficial uses. Staff would recommend that the board adopt this general permit as proposed.
questions or comments by board members?
Just a question before we come back to comments. Lisa, I'm just curious, why is the Rowdy Creek Hatchery not on this list?
There is no Rowdy Creek Hatchery that I'm aware of.
In our region. There may be one.
It's on the Smith River.
Oh.
You know, somebody brought that up to me the other day, but I don't believe that...
It may not meet the criteria, but I think it's something that might be worth some investigation.
Well, and so one great thing about having a general permit is that it does not limit the number of facilities
right.
that can be enrolled under it. So I will make a
It's a relatively small hatchery that operates this time of year, but it is a functioning hatchery, and I'm just surprised it's not on the list. It may not fit the criteria, but I think it's worth investigating.
And we have every opportunity to cover that under this general permit if that's an operational hatchery in our region.
Board Member Hale.
Thanks. No real comments, excuse me, on the overall permit, but I did, in the monitoring and reporting plan, have just two little housekeeping catches. The first would be on page E4, or table E4. One of the parameters noted is ammonia nitrogen. I'm not sure if it's ammonia or if it's nitrogen. Quick little housekeeping there. And then secondly, on the following page in table E8 and E9, your units for turbidity are listed as milligrams per liter instead of NTUs or FNUs. So those will need to be changed.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And to clarify the record, is staff going to amend your proposal to reflect those changes so we don't have to have a formal motion up here?
Yes, staff will make those corrections.
Okay, thank you. Board Member Norton.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Lisa, thank you. I noticed that in the toxicity or in the discussion of the waste reduction and the special studies that's been required here, you refer to cleaning chemicals and disease control chemicals. Let me ask you, because there's also ivermectin on here. Ivermectin is a hormonal manipulation chemical. Can we make that broader, please? Can we include then, because we're not only talking about, or would there be reason not to do that? Cleaning and disease control chemicals, I totally understand. I believe the intent of this is to understand then the effects of these hatcheries and their effluent on the effects of toxicity and within the system, so it seems like it would be appropriate to include that as well.
Yes, in the description.
Yes.
Of the
in inclusion within a study. Then, if they're going to do an assessment on toxicity as it relates to effluent from these facilities, it strikes me that it would be wise for us to include then all of these.
I think that's the way staff contemplated it,
yes.
But I understand that the language is not as clear. So, yes, we can make that change.
Great. And can I ask you then, to Lisa, can you get into some finer detail about that special study?
Well, so staff would expect that even if the department or whoever, you know, maybe there's different ownership at the different hatcheries, mm-hmm. so maybe the department would be coordinating with each ownership, but that the department essentially would be submitting either one comprehensive plan that would be implemented individually at each hatchery or an individual plan for each hatchery. We would be expecting from the department an evaluation, a work plan for an evaluation of existing practices to identify potentials for source reduction. That would be the number one thing that we would hope for, is that they would find ways to modify their operations so that they could reduce the amount of chemicals that are being used to begin with. Then each hatchery would need to do whole effluent toxicity testing because we would be concerned possibly with cumulative effects from different chemicals or various operations. And then individual chemical-specific, based on whatever chemicals are being used at the facility, chemical-specific analysis to measure, the concentrations and to basically verify that they're meeting the intent of the hatchery policy. Mona passed me a note to make sure I remember which changes to add to the permit. So essentially that is, in a nutshell, what we would be expecting. That special study, if you will, is required to be, under the permit, required to be approved or by the executive officer. So our staff would be looking very carefully at that study to ensure that everything in there would be giving us additional information, one, to verify compliance with the hatchery policy, but then also to, you know, verify if other additional changes need to be made at the hatchery to improve operations.
And please remind me too, Lisa, what time frame then are we talking about to have this done? I understand the preparation of a work plan to come in for approval by staff and then to go implement this. Is this contemplated then in a term of permit?
Oh, absolutely. We would need this information before the term of this permit was expired.
5 years.
Yeah, within the 5 years. And I would imagine that depending on what type of sampling is proposed by the department, that, you know, we want chemical-specific effluent concentrations for when they are applying these chemicals. Well, the chemicals for disease control, for example, are only applied when a disease is identified.
Yes.
So it's not an all-the-time application. So the monitoring would need to be targeted to those special circumstances. So we can't exactly say when that's going to happen, but we anticipate that the time frame for this would be submitted in sufficient manner that we would be able to incorporate this information to the next permit renewal.
Well, and the wisdom then, I mean, looking at a basin plan hatchery policy, that those are, I'm always kind of amazed that, you know, in 1989, the wisdom of a basin plan amendment like that puts in language that actually affects us today. And we are an agency that lives and amends and adapts. But looking in the rearview mirror, that's a very wise policy. I mean, these are point source discharges. They are year-round. There is a limited number of facilities here. But at the same time, whole effluent toxicity and the chemical specific, those are powerful tools. They seem very appropriate here. And I would ask then, as you get that information as it comes back, whether we do it in 5 years and whether I'm still here in 5 years, but nonetheless, it would be very good to have some information on that. It would be very good to have some feedback to whether it be EO report or something like that, or that you come back before us. I'd like to hear what you find. In essence.
Very good.
Excuse me, Mr. Norn. I'm Mona Doherty, senior engineer with your staff, and I have been sworn in. I wanted to ask if you want us to propose some slight modifications to the language for your consideration prior to approval, or if the current language in the chemical control verification and monitoring reporting plan is adequate.
Well, and let me volley back to you, Mona, because... And I characterize Lisa's words because, Lisa, as you discussed this and as it was presented by you and in your just our handout here, that you refer to cleaning chemicals and disease control chemicals, right?
Right.
And that's what you're referring to, I believe, Mona. So, you know, ivermectin, we used ivermectin on our cows to bring them in estrus. So that's a hormone manipulation chemical that's active at very low concentration. So if the language is broad enough in this permit as is to include that now, fine. If it's not, then I wouldn't be not to name ivermectin, but or appropriate or add a catch-all in there to that language to this permit to say cleaning chemicals, disease control chemicals, and or other chemicals of use and concern at this facility. Something broad to capture this. Just to be inclusive. I think we need to have, and again, I'm not going to look through this thing while we're talking here and to know where every reference is here, but. And I characterized it mainly by how Lisa was talking about it in her presentation. So I just want to capture that if whole effluent toxicity and chemical-specific toxicity testing is a very powerful tool. My request is let's get broad enough to understand. I think the concern of this agency, and this is Fish and Wildlife that runs these mainly, I believe, you know, there's real truth here that detection limits have gotten nothing but lower. Right. And, you know, some of this stuff we can go to parts per trillion level on. And it's amazingly low. And it's amazingly hard then to not have a detection out here. So for regulatory purposes and for us to learn from, I just want to be inclusive so that we have an adequate range and inclusion of the types of products that are used here, point source discharges, time and space.
I can tell you with certainty that that was the overall intent of staff,
I
agree that with you that the language does limit. So I would propose that we would take a look at how we could broaden that to make sure that we were inclusive of all of the chemicals.
With regard, by the way, to amending the permit to address your question, Mona, I'll leave that to you. My request is to be inclusive here and that I don't think we need to go through this permit line by line right here, right now, to try to find every one of these.
Samantha Olson, legal counsel.
If I could suggest, because it is such a long permit and complicated, that the first time... Check.
You're on.
So this is Samantha Olson, your counsel. I'm going to recommend, and we can look at it further as comments come in, but it's a long permit, and this is a lot. It's all interspersed throughout the permit, so the first time we come across the definition, I propose we drop a footnote and says all references to cleaning wastes and disease control chemicals include all chemicals or something to that effect so that we don't have to go through line by line, hundreds of pages.
I agree.
And that would, I think that incorporates the intent of it, that,
yes, that
all
would work,
chemicals.
Right. I had the same concern as legal counsel. With one other provision, I want us to have the specific language read into the record prior to adoption on the footnote so that, because I appreciate on several of the comments, Lisa, you said you would change the permit. But because this is a regulatory document, that's not good enough. Is it? We'll change the permit for exactly this way and list the language. So before we vote on it, if we'll hear the public testimony, if staff can work on getting that precise language.
Mr. Chair, am I correct, though, that does not include the two typos identified by Member Hales? Those you're okay with correcting without putting on a screen?
Right.
Okay.
Well, those got clarified.
Yeah.
What happened was Board Member Noren brought up several points. Our staff was very responsive to them, which we appreciate, but I wanted to get the responsiveness and their willingness to make the changes into specific language so it's very clear what we're voting on.
Yes, sir. We will do that.
Thanks, Lisa. Appreciate it.
This is Mona Doherty again with your staff. So I have a note from our division chief that ammonia and nitrogen is correct and is a measure of the amount of ammonia, and that maybe we could clarify it by adding a dash.
That's fine.
Any other questions from the board?
Any further questions or comments?
Thank you.
Okay, I'd like to call up the representative from the California Department of Fish and Game.
Thank you for the opportunity. Am I on? Yep. So thank you for the opportunity to speak to you all. My name is Terry Jackson, Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I have been sworn in.
Okay, thank you.
So I want to thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you, and I'll do my best to answer your questions. Some of the questions that you posed to Lisa and the board, I can answer a couple of those as well. But I'm a senior environmental scientist and fishery biologist responsible for statewide MPDS and Homeland Security coordination for 23 hatcheries around the state. I've been doing fishery biology and science for 31 years, 23 of them with the state. We appreciate the willingness of the board to work with us on these issues. It's been kind of a challenge working through some of the stuff and interpretation of things. And I think we've developed a good permit for the four facilities that we are currently asking to be adopted in this. We've enjoyed working candidly and transparently with the board members, and we believe this is a much improved permit over the current individual permits. As you notice, a couple of them are 18 years old. So although Fish and Wildlife was admittedly disappointed with not being successful at convincing the board to to modify the hatchery policy regarding prohibiting discharge of detectable levels of some drugs and chemicals. So I think the drugs and chemicals, that's part of the language. I think that addresses ivermectin, for instance. It is a drug. For disease treatments, we now better understand. We didn't really understand as a department the kind of constraints that the board was under with the way of modifying a basin plan, especially in short notice, considering that we're trying to adopt it now. And we believe that the permit represents a very equitable compromise, and we appreciate that. I believe that the subject of greatest concern, obviously, is this whole drug issue and chemical issue, so I'd like to elaborate a little bit on that. Ironically, as Lisa mentioned, as a resource agency raising a species that is often used as a bioassay, which is the rainbow trout steelhead, so to speak, a canary of the coal mine, in our very rigorous and diligent efforts to for decades of treating fish and diseases for fungus and bacteria and pathogens, the concentration's high enough to control and kill the diseases, but yet at the same time make sure that we weren't violating any discharge prohibitions has required a lot of work. And we've apparently led the board to believe that the prohibition was not a challenge for us because we didn't have any violations, and I find that kind of ironic. We, too, want clean water, not only for ourselves, but for the fish we put them in. Again, we're a resource agency, and we also have, we want clean water for all the beneficial uses, wildlife, et cetera. The North Coast hatcheries, as Lisa mentioned, are all anadromous mitigation facilities, with the exception of Mad River Hatchery. It's not a mitigation, it's an enhancement facility. And at the base of dams constructed decades ago, and they're operated by non-fish and wildlife facilities. And owners. This is to compensate the decline of natural salmon and steelhead production associated with loss of habitat and rearing habitat above those dams that these fish no longer have access to because none of these dams have fish ladders on them. The hatcheries have court-ordered production goals for escapement, recreational, commercial, and tribal fisheries. They're used for enhancement and restoration. Provide ecosystem and community functions as well as societal benefits. And there, and in particular, coho, all five of our facilities in the North Coast deal with coho, which is a both state and federal endangered species under the ESA. And so we are very tied with NOAA fisheries, et cetera, so there's a lot that goes on at our facilities. A major challenge at our facilities is that we are at the mercy of the upstream conditions, which the water controls our hatchery. So no matter what goes on upstream of us, we're at the mercy of it. And, of course, lately we've been having the droughts, which affects water temperature and actually sediment input. When it rains on these empty reservoirs, a lot more sediment comes in. This really adds to concern for us with disease ailments. And then we're actually concerned. Recently we heard talk about El Nino, and we have no idea what that's going to mean for us in the near future, at least this particular season. We're very skilled. Our managers are very skilled. They live on site 24/7 and operate this facility, 365, and they're very trained on what they do, including with the BMP training, et cetera. We have tremendous expertise in our pathologists, veterinarians, research scientists, chemists, and our water pollution control laboratory that's tied with OSPR, and the aquatic assessment laboratory, which is also tied tightly with the State Water Board swamp program. They're constantly involved in our hatcheries to make sure that the beneficial uses are taken care of as well with our treatments. And we function as a team and with the purpose of the operation to ensure effluent water quality objectives are met. And as was noted on in the permit on page F8, that under the compliance summary, that we have been compliant with water surface, having no violations, and even with the Russian River having a sediment issues and stuff, that both Warm Screens and Coyote do not contribute to that according to the RPA. Drugs and chemicals in our hatcheries are strictly prescribed by the pathologists and veterinarians on site evaluation of the affected fish. All of the drugs and chemicals identified in this general permit, including slice and ivermectin, are under the aquatic animal drug approval partnership program and in direct response to the USDA's that they wanted to make sure that all drugs and therapeutic uses in aquaculture were controlled. And so the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, as many as well as others, discontinued the use of the unapproved drugs and therapeutics in fisheries programs, and we engaged in the compassionate and investigational new animal drug, or INAD, exemption process. And the INAD exemptions do follow the continued use of, or do allow the continued use of unapproved drugs in a very approved manner under strict FDA guidelines. INAD exemptions are granted by the FDA Center for Veterinary Medicine. And so bottom line is we do comply with all those things with both our vets and our pathologists. Disease treatment at a facility is relatively infrequent, and very few drugs and chemicals listed in the general permit are currently used. However, we wanted to have a broader range, just like any doctor would. You want to have the drugs available, just at least as that they're allowed, in case something comes up that we need them. Did the handout make it to you guys? Okay, so I'm sorry that I didn't make a slide of this. I was working on this until midnight last night after I got done with family duties, and in an attempt with this spreadsheet, I tried to help you guys see that we really don't use that many chemicals at these particular facilities. The water isn't quite clean in general, other than dealing with issues from the upstream. Only two of the facilities, Trinity and Warm Springs, actually have the opportunity to surface discharge chemicals and or drugs to the receiving water, although they have very good settling basins. Both Mad River, well, Coyote doesn't use any drugs. They're only open 6 months a year, and we've never used any drugs or chemicals at that facility. And Mad River, all water travels into a percolation pond, so there is no outlet of that pond to the surface water. So essentially, not only do we not use very few drugs, but also this table is based on number of days. It doesn't talk about concentrations, although the concentrations are quite low. But the number of days that we use any drug and chemical, and for instance, at Trinity River, kind of a worst-case scenario back in 2010 was a 14% of the days of the year, which is 50, where potassium permanganate was utilized. And that has been decreasing in general as we improve our operations. And in general, for instance, iodine, we have been decreasing dramatically use at Trinity, because from 58% to below 25% so far. And these are actions as we've been improving the way we do things. The drought, actually, fascinatingly, has caused us to look at new ways of doing things because of the sedimentation and fungus issues. We've had to go from stacked trays where the water flows through all of them to where now we have what are called spawning jars, where it's kind of like a quicksand where the water fluffs the eggs, and we're having a much higher success, which requires less use of iodine for fungus, which has been a real benefit. Trinity, one of the reasons they use as much as they do is they spawn 6 months of the year four different species. And so with that, I'd like to stop. I see that my time is up, and I'd be glad to answer any additional questions that you may have, including anything that I could address for you that you asked Lisa and she wasn't sure of, for instance, on Rowdy Creek. Mr. Gustee.
Board member questions? Board member Gustee.
Thank you. So, Rowdy Creek.
Well, Rowdy Creek, I used to be the steelhead biologist for the state for 18 years, and so Rowdy Creek is a privately held facility. It's not state-owned. I do not know what their production level in a cap facility is 20,000 pounds of fish. So I do not know if they operate at that level. I do know that they don't have a permit or are considering it, to my knowledge, because obviously if they did, the Water Board would be aware of them having a permit currently. So, but that's just wanted to let you know they are a private facility, and
right.
I suspect that the reason they don't is that their production is less than 20,000 pounds.
Okay. While I've got you. So is Trinity Hatchery producing coho salmon?
Correct.
Yes. Are there any others?
Yes, Trinity produces the coho salmon, which is actually in negotiations with the Hoopa tribe currently on who will actually raise those fish. We also raise steelhead, which are multiple runs of steelhead there. And in particular, we raise fall run and spring run Chinook.
And one last question for you, sir. Do these hatcheries play any role in supporting ick populations in these rivers?
Actually, it's in the reverse. Our efforts, that's why we use such as formalin. As a, just like in an aquarium, if anybody's ever had an aquarium, you get ick on your fish. And our intent is to keep ick off of it because we could have an outbreak in a facility, you know, in a crowded facility that would wipe us out. So one of the reasons that we need some of these chemicals is to sometimes we even receive ick from our upstream, you know, in our inflow. We receive it, and all of a sudden we have an outbreak. Pathologist comes, and we treat it. So the answer to that is no.
Thank you.
I just wanted to thank you for the cooperation in the department, and I believe our staff are cooperating with you on working out a sister agency relationship that will take care of protecting beneficial uses. And I know that you worked very hard on it, and I appreciate that.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
I have a question for Board Member Noren, real quick. And then if we do need to make a change, I'm going to request a 5-minute break so that we can look through this permit. But in reviewing the permit, there's a lot of basic prohibitions and requirements that apply to all chemicals. That would, I'm assuming, include the chemical that you're concerned of. The provisions dealing with treatment waste and cleaning waste are specific to the hatchery policy, and so there's a specific requirement for special study for those. So the question is, do you want those special studies to apply to this particular chemical or other types of chemicals? In that case, we would want to make a little change in here. But if not, if you're just concerned that we're covering
my request, Samantha, is that if they're going to do a whole effluent toxicity testing and specific to these facilities, I would like to see them include all use chemicals.
Okay.
To be broad enough.
So before we put the matter before the board.
That's my request. Of course, it's up to the other board members here to include that as well. I would like to see that included.
I would share that view. Obviously, we're not going to mandate testing for all chemicals, but having the right to test for all chemicals.
And the thing is, they've got a work plan. Your agency is going to then propose this scope of study on these five facilities or four facilities through a work plan process with our staff. And I think that is the process then to work out what specific chemicals are used then at these facilities. My suggestion is just have the language in this permit that we are asking for inclusion of all chemicals as appropriate for the facilities.
So we'll just request before the, after public comment of a 5-minute break so we can. Yeah.
Yes, you'll certainly get it.
Get together and make sure.
And the public may very well have suggestions as well.
Yeah, as a clarification, we do not use cleaning chemicals that would run through the raceways. That would be toxic to fish. And so, of course, those are not in the water system. If we utilize cleaning chemicals, for instance, a stocking truck, you're worried about disease transport and stuff. Each truck is cleaned before it goes to a new water. And most of our facilities, of course, stock within, but currently with NOAA fisheries at Warm Springs that are asking us to move fish maybe to other basins to help with the coho situation. So when we clean, any cleaning products go to the sewer system rather than into the surface waters. Yeah, so we're very, very careful. Obviously, these fish are are very valuable.
By the way, too, Terry, I mean, I had the opportunity to work at, I did some investigative and cleanup work up at Warm Springs, and, you know, I was very well aware up there while we were drilling holes in the ground to try to go characterize that site that that place was a big water factory.
Yes.
It's amazing, that place, and to go in there, and then I actually took my family back to go look at it. It's quite impressive, the work that's done there. They are unique, though. These facilities are unique in that they do have a discharge that is a year-round. They flow through. They have a unique discharge here. And I commend the work that you do. All I want to do is capture and make sure that we have compliance with basin plan requirements and that you obviously have a interest in raising healthy fish in a minimization of any chemicals, I'm sure. I do note, though, that the influent water quality information that's in this permit, you know, you had mentioned that it's challenging possibly through a drought to then, because your turbidity or your suspended sediments change. It's interesting that there's like a tenfold difference between some of these facilities on your influent water quality from suspended solids. So you have a wide variety, it looks to me like, of influent water quality. And I would imagine that's temporal, too, that it's seasonal and that... That's got to be challenging when you're using, I know that, you know, say like some of these chemicals I know are probably absorbed onto some of the suspended sediments and or your what's ever in that water coming in and adjusting and trying to find that balance of chemical concentration for the efficacy of what you're trying to do with it. That's got to be challenging. And
it's tremendously challenging. And we appreciate our pathologists in particular. They're very good at their job. But you are correct. I mean, we have anywhere from Coyote Valley, which could have go from almost no milligrams per liter of suspended or settleable solids to a storm comes into Lake Mendocino and our jumps to 100 milligrams per liter. You know, it's just mud.
Well, and another thing, Terry, the way that I see it is that, you know, so the whole effluent toxicity, you're in essence running, as you said, you know, some of these bioassay species that are used include, you know, juvenile rainbow trout, which are a very, very sensitive species. I think that the special studies here are beneficial for both you as an agency running these facilities and for ourselves to know that we have basin plan compliance and protection of water quality here. So I think that there's an opportunity to learn something here.
And I agree. And so as you mentioned, Member Noren, that, the ability to detect lower and lower levels. At the same time, the science has increased to evaluate potential effects of the bioassay species. And in the case, that's where part of our discussion was, for instance, with potassium permanganate, you know, where now it's 0.12 is an allowable of milligrams per liter is an allowable level at all of our other facilities statewide, minus here, where it's zero detect. And so yes, it's both sides of that coin. Is yeah. One that we can increase detection sensitivity, but on the other side, so I think that the plan is a good plan, is a good interim plan. Hopefully we'll have great information during this five-year period to make better decisions or whatever come the next 5 years, if any of us are still here.
Well, thanks again, Terry.
All right. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
And then the way the permit's written, we reserve all options are open for further or other regulation if that should prove necessary. So,
correct. No, we appreciate this opportunity. Thank
yeah.
you.
Thank you.
All right, I'd like to call on Hillary Avalon, Elaine Martinez-Carey, and after that, Anne Maurice.
Good morning. I'm Hillary Avalon. I live in Sebastopol. I've been sworn in. I just wanted to bring your attention to a study that was recently published by John Wiley and Sons, which is wiley.com, regarding the effects of pesticides and other chemicals on aquatic life. In this study, the authors examined long-term effects on aquatic invertebrate communities of tertiary mixtures of commonly used pesticides, and the results indicated that these chemicals continued to impact natural systems even when no detectable level remained in the water and bound to the particles. The greatest effects were noticed on the zooplankton communities at bottom of our food chain. In addition, there is established knowledge of chemical reactions that take place in water containing these chemicals that actually create brand new chemicals that were never there before. These emerging contaminants are terrifying for two reasons. One, we have no idea how they'll behave in the environment since they're new. And two, we have no idea where they'll show up because discharging facilities such as hatcheries are not required to test for them. And the chemicals have been known to drift great distances, especially when introduced into waterways. I feel that if there's any hope of actually saving the salmon we're so fervently breeding to protect them, a zero tolerance should be maintained for all effluent from the hatchery, as well as any other discharges or releases into the natural environment. Releasing detectable levels of chemicals, I feel, is a setup to destroy the environment in which we're expecting the salmon to exist. My belief is that the current basin plan has a no detectable chemical policy, and I think you guys should hold fast to that. Since we have evidence that even small amounts of these chemicals cause harm in aquatic environments, and we don't know the end result of this harm on the environment as a whole. I think it would be imprudent and cavalier to change the current plan and or the verbiage in the permits in the face of current knowledge of the harm that could occur, to say nothing of the potential harm that we don't currently understand. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Eileen Martinez Carey. I've been sworn in. I live in Creighton, and I represent Pixie Nation Concerned Citizens. I worked at the zoo for many years under the guidance of Joe Fitting in the Animal Resource Center. I worked for many years with Fish and Wildlife, and I'm very, very aware of their practices, which for the most part are pretty good. I've been completely against fisheries since the concept, because any of you will know with basic biology information that hopefully you received in school that the strongest always survives. That's nature. So what we're doing with these fishery programs is really abhorrent to nature. We're creating weaker fish. There is never a guarantee that these things will not go out into the wild. These chemicals, FDA approval is kind of a joke to me, because the bottom line is the FDA approves tons of things all the time that a few years later they find are actually very toxic. And with my understanding of biology, things do build up in someone's systems, just like the vaccinations. When I was growing up, you only had a few vaccinations. Now there's over 40. That's the big problem. When you keep adding to things, it creates a buildup. And those levels are not always detectable very, very quickly. They build up. So you've got an increase in autism. You have increases of all sorts of autoimmune disorders right now. As a matter of fact, some people would even say it's completely off the charts what's going on in our general health population. So I'm going to ask everybody here to really search in your heart, really close your eyes, say some prayers, and ask yourself if you think it's logical to allow any more waste in our waterways that now we are realizing are so precious. We should have realized this a long time ago, and each and every one of us should be ashamed. I'm a grandmother, and I'm also part Native, Indigenous person too. And the way our people look at things is everyone are our grandchildren. We take that very seriously. The fact that we're even considering adding more waste is completely perverted, immoral, when our waterways are completely stressed, and everyone here knows this. Chemical fertilizers that run off from these fields of commercial farming, and I have a little farm, I do all organic, and I try to practice sustainability in every way I can. I would never use any pesticide on my land, ever, because we need to recover from that old way of thinking that does not serve us at all. It actually harms us in the end, so that a few people in the pharmaceutical industries are getting wealthy on our backs, the working people's backs, that no longer can afford medical care to keep up with all the illnesses in my family, I actually have an autistic child. And it's not okay what we're doing right now. And I just am astounded.
You need to finish up your red light.
Right. I'm sorry that I'm taking time, but this is a moral issue. And I ask you, please, to reconsider this. We do not need any more waste discharge. And that's the important word here. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Oh, one last thing. The public was not notified, and I do question the way that you say the public was notified. I didn't get my letter until late, and that was because I'm the public. I got notified on a lot of things, but not this. And this is extremely important for the public to know about. Thank you for your time. Okay.
Anne Maurice.
Anne Maurice, Ad Hoc Committee for Clean Water. I've been testifying for years regarding salmon fisheries and maintaining a healthy fishery and wastewater discharges as well. And frankly, I'm appalled at the pressure that was applied by the Department of Fish and Wildlife on your staff and the board to relax discharge standards. This is the same Department of Fish and Wildlife that has been advising people and threatening rural residents with fines unless we stop watering our non-existent sidewalks and washing our cars and having watering lawns which don't exist. At the same time, they are operating these hatcheries with millions of gallons of water running through them on a daily basis, and hatcheries that have become that were originally mitigation for dams, for the loss of habitat above dams, but now are actually mitigation for the dewatering of creeks all over the watershed. And the extinction of the coho and steelhead. So how the Department of Fish and Wildlife could be pushing to relax discharge standards, I'm amazed. There's been mention of of detecting very small amounts so that now you can detect down to parts per trillion. Well, I would like to suggest to the board that you take a look at all of the evidence that indicates that the human body, for one, and no doubt fish bodies as well, operate on parts per trillion. It's not a very tiny amount, so to speak, relatively speaking, but relative to what? If your body operates on parts per trillion with regards to hormones, and I believe, Board Member Noren, you were referring to the hormonal properties of ivermectin or its ability to influence hormone production or hormone reaction, there's actually hormones that are administered at Lake Sonoma at the Warm Springs Hatchery to the coho captive bred fish. It's a gonadotropin, okay? And it's not like toxins. Toxins you think of as if you take a very low dose, maybe your body can tolerate it. Hormones don't operate that way, and there's plenty of evidence to that fact, that very low amounts of hormones severely impact an organism. So I would suggest in this question of what language should be used regarding chemicals, the word hormone should be included because hormones are used at these hatcheries. And some of the chemicals that are used, we've got not just ivermectin, emamectin, oxytetracycline, penicillin G, fluorphenicol, amoxicillin trihydrate, erythromycin, romet, formaldehyde, PVP, iodine, hydrogen peroxide, potassium permanganate, sodium chlorate, acetic acid, chloramine T, MS-222, bicarbonate, carbon dioxide, and aqueous S. Ooh, already?
Yeah.
Those chemicals, some of them are sedatives as well. So I would suggest that, yes, it is very important that your language be broad. And I just want to mention two things that were, if I can, please.
And then you do need to finish up.
That I saw that the Atascadero-Green Valley Creek Watershed Group was distributing carcasses around the watershed to feed juveniles. I would look at distributing carcasses that come from Warm Springs, for example. If they are treated with all these chemicals, they have the potential for polluting the creek, and I think you should look into that practice of, and perhaps that should be prohibited by the North Coast Regional Board. And another concern is that INAD, that's being mentioned as an FDA program, that's experimental. Should we be experimenting on an endangered species? Thank you.
Thank you. Any board member comments or questions? Either. I'm bringing, well, I wanted, talking first, any questions for Anne-Marie's? Okay. Then I wanted to ask whether our staff wants to respond at all. Okay, then I'll bring it back to the board. But before we take action, we're going to take a brief break to get the language that broadens it to be all relevant chemicals or antibiotics, et cetera.
Thank you, Chairman Corbett. This is probably going to sound more like a commentary than comments. but I think the this topic gives us the opportunity as a board to bring, shed some light on what I think is a much larger topic of the impact of hatcheries and dams on, as it relates to water quality and beneficial uses. Personally, I think it's a fool's folly to consider hatcheries as mitigation to damming a river. We know that dams can affect geomorphology. They can affect the hydrographs of rivers. We know that they've impacted genetic purity of fish. We know that they can create more aggressive cohorts directly competing with native strains of fish and even through predation. And we know that under certain situations that diseases can occur in these facilities. I have no problem stating publicly that I believe Coyote Dam ruined a world-class steelhead fishery when it was constructed. And to suggest that a hatchery replaces a functional river, I think we need to rethink that kind of strategy. Though I appreciate the role that hatcheries play in meeting the immediate needs of fulfilling people's desire to have fish, I think it does. Some of the comments here I agree with. There are some long-term impacts, and you know, most recently, people like Peter Moyles have came out and spoke publicly about perhaps these hatcheries are actually inhibiting our ability to recapture some wild stocks of fish. So I think these are big questions, and I think that I would have never even thought of bringing this forward in a public forum before the Klamath Dam removal started to get some legs under it. I think, you know, we are moving into a new way of thinking of how we manage rivers and how we manage fish, and I think the concept of beneficial use could have a broader application than simply just looking at pollutants going into water. I think we're dealing with much bigger issues on this that affect economic viability of communities, cultural attributes of many members of our community, and just the need to ensure sustainable populations of wild fish. So I appreciate what we're doing today. I appreciate why we're doing it. But I wanted to use this opportunity to, as a platform, I'm being honest, to use a platform for us to force ourselves to think differently as we move forward, as we try and wrestle with the huge issue of fish restoration.
So I will adjourn for 5 minutes. I did want to say the effect of hatcheries on your wild fish and on coho. As far as I know, most of the hatcheries have already gone through litigation, and that's in settlement and a quantification, and certain scientific studies are required now that will probably result in a scaling down on the numbers of coho, because their thrust of the lawsuit was they were limiting their inhabitants. So your point is well taken, and I think Dr. Moyle is probably cited in those proceedings. Board Member Massey, and then we'll take a five-minute break.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lisa or Mona, there was a statement made that we have reduced levels of requirements in this permit as opposed to the previous permits. Have there been any reductions of standards?
No. There have been no reduction of standards in this permit compared to the individual permits. In contrast, what we are requiring is the submittal of a best management practices plan that includes the maintenance requirements for the facilities, as well as operator training for the facilities, and in source reduction opportunities and those things to comply with the effluent limit guidelines. That was not part of the individual permits in the past. In addition, we have considerable amount of monitoring and reporting that was not incorporated into the previous permits, which includes quarterly reporting of every time a drug is used, how much is used, what they're using it for. So we weren't getting that level of detail on the chemical usage at the facilities in the past, and this permit will require that for these facilities.
And I believe in addition to acute toxicity, and then there's a formula of calculation, we also are having that now verified by the monitoring program, right?
That is correct.
So trust but verify.
Right. There is a special study, just to expand a little bit on what Lisa was saying. There's a special study that is new in the general permit to both look at ways to reduce the use of chemicals as well as more fully characterize the chemicals in the discharge and look at potential impacts through the whole effluent toxicity testing. So those components are new.
In addition, we are also asking for the reporting of solid waste disposal, such as carcasses. So that will also have to be reported to the board.
Let me simplify it for a board member. We are increasing the requirements, not decreasing the requirements.
That is correct.
Thank you.
I'm going to call a five-minute recess so staff can come up with specific language. And then after that, I'll allow brief comment on that language, and then the board will vote on this matter. Thank you. For those that are interested in the Russian River, that will be taken up at 1 o'clock certain, so you can take time off to get lunch. So with that, I will call for staff to come up with the introduced language.
Thank you, Chairman Corbett. Just for clarification, Member Noren, you were requesting that we modify the language in the special study known as the Reduction and Verification Monitoring and Reporting Plan to be submitted for concurrence by the Executive Officer for evaluating the effluent quality and discharges associated with each hatchery that would be covered under the general permit. So staff has inserted a footnote that has been placed on the screen here, and I will read the language until the footnote and then read the footnote. Up. Thank you. So chemical controls verification monitoring and reporting plan. Within 1 year of the issuance of the notice of applicability authorizing coverage under this general order, each permittee must submit for executive officer concurrence a site-specific chemical controls monitoring and reporting plan, reduction and verification MRP, in order to minimize the need for disease control chemicals and characterize effluent associated with disease control activities. Footnote number 2. Reference to disease control chemicals also includes any chemicals used in the facility for cleaning and other treatment purposes. Does that satisfy
that
your concern?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. So with that modification.
Hold on. You might have a question.
Oh, excuse me.
Does that work for CDFW?
They're going to have a chance to.
Okay.
Let me say, that works for me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I would like to call California Department of Fish and Wildlife up for comment. And then we'll call on the public. And just so everybody knows, we're not reopening the whole thing. We're just making comments on the amendment. So,
this is Terry Jackson, California Department of Fish and Wildlife. And, I just want to clarify, because I am fine with the language, I want to clarify that when you're talking about cleaning products, since we don't put them in our effluent, is this strictly for the effluent, or is it for all? Do we have to also have one that goes down in the sewer?
No, sir. It would just be applicable to the effluent.
Okay. So with that clarification, then, yes, this is fine.
Great. Thanks, Terry.
And I'll call on the members of the public, if any, who want to comment on the amendment.
Okay.
come on up if you want to say. I don't want to reopen the whole thing, but yeah, this is your
I'll
chance.
I'll make it really quick. I just wish there was more specific lists up there. Oh, I'm sorry. Eileen Martinez Carey. I wish that it was just more specifically addressed as far as it's not just cleaning and all the other stuff for medication. It's also to encourage them to mate because they will not mate in these tanks. So they have to be fed these supposedly minuscule amounts of hormones. And I think that needs to be very clear up there because the general public won't get it. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? Please step forward and identify yourself.
Anne Maurice. So hormones, then, you would say is included in the other treatment purposes?
That's as I understand it, Anne Maurice.
Thank you.
Yes.
That is the intent of the language there, and that's how staff will be reviewing these plans.
That's great.
And that's better, I think, than a specific list because in case things change, you can include anything. So it's meant to be broader, not narrower. Okay. With that, I'm sorry.
So, yeah. If it's not going to apply to what goes into the sewer, is. Oh, I'm so sorry, guys. Hillary Avalon. The discharge that would go into the sewer, it would not be covered by this?
The discharge that goes into the sewer is covered by the wastewater treatment permit for the sewer.
Okay, and is that part of the basin plan?
No, it's a permit that is issued by our agency.
Okay,
separate
thank
permit.
You.
Okay. With that, what I'd like is staff to clarify your final staff position. So I think you need to include the errata sheet. You need to include the typos. You need to include this language as being part of the staff report. So we have a combined staff report to make a motion on.
So we have the list of the typos.
We have previously characterized the typos, so why don't we just mention the typos previously characterized, if that's okay with the chair.
Yes, that's okay. I just wanted to make sure since we're doing our laundry, throw it all in.
Fabulous. So we do have a change sheet that was prepared in advance of the meeting. Changes to the proposed order, attachment E, table E3, table note 1 has been modified. It now states influent monitoring is not required at Mad River Hatchery because A, contrary to all other permittees, Mad River Hatchery's compliance with effluent limit of 8 milligrams per liter for total suspended solids is not dependent on an incremental increase above the concentration present in the influent, and B, the source of influent at Mad River Hatchery is from groundwater wells and therefore not expected to contain significant amounts of settleable solids. Both of those items are required for monitoring in the influent of all the other hatchery facilities. Member Hales suggested or identified two typographic errors, one on attachment E, table E8, and one on attachment E, table E9, the units for turbidity should reflect NTU, not milligrams per liter. Those changes will also be incorporated into the final permit, as well as the proposed footnote on the reduction and verification monitoring plan, which indicates that reference to disease control chemicals also includes any chemicals used in the facility for cleaning and other treatment purposes. With those changes, Chairman Corbett, staff would recommend that you adopt the permit in front of you.
All right, thank you. Do I hear a motion? I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, I would give you a motion to accept R12150009 with corrections and additions as noted in the record.
Is there a second?
Second.
And I know Board Member Massey's going out with his classic motion. So with that, can you please take the roll?
Aye.
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 Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm said I was going to take up the Russian River at 1, so we have the potential of taking up the item on Sigma, the groundwater. Is staff prepared to present on that?
We are prepared for that, or we could take up the dairy item.
I'm sorry.
It's either your choice.
It's the dairy item. I stand corrected. So we'd like to take up the dairy item at this point in time.